have a lot of passion for what you're doing. This rings true because it's so hard that if you don't, any rational person would give up. It's really hard, and you have to do it over a sustained period of time. So if you don't love it, and if you're not having fun doing it, you're gonna give up.
Welcome to another episode of John's Entitled Podcast, a partner of MoshpitNation.com. This week's guest is Aaron Patrick, bassist for All That Remains. You might remember him from his time in Bury Your Dead. And you might remember Daniel Terry from his time spent over at Discography Discussion. How are you doing this afternoon?
Man, I'm doing great. Really can't complain. I just got done carrying like 15 175-pound garage door sections in 4 hours. So to be honest, I'm just happy to be alive.
I don't know if those are the words maybe you would want to use given the guest that we're talking about.
Well, you know, that sounded really insensitive, and for that I apologize. Oh, really killed my vibe.
We can redo this if you want.
I was excited. No, leave it in. Leave it in.
Right.
Yeah, it sucks. And it sucks, too, because my understanding is this interview was conducted prior to.
About a week before, yeah.
Yeah, and so that just makes it even more like, man, all the good vibes from the interview are now kind of like, shit.
Well, I mean, we had kind of hit on this previously when we talked about the passing of Ole a few weeks ago when it first had actually happened. And yes, this interview had, you know, happened before all of that had actually transpired, and it sucks. I haven't really seen any more information coming out about that, but like I kind of mentioned and have seen subsequently since, even more so than when I was talking about it, hours after it had been reported, it's just been great to see the overwhelming outpour of support for Ole. All the great, you know, stories and photos everyone was sharing of their time spent with him, touring and so forth. And, you know, just really is one of those things where, by all accounts, nicest dude ever. And just a tremendous loss for the metal scene. You know, like I had said before, during my interview with Phil, Ole was just in the back just woodshedding, just practicing. And it was before their set. But I think, you know, that's always the thing that everyone always had to say in reading all the comments about him is that, you know, he always had a guitar in his hand. He loved playing and was just the nicest dude ever. And it's, I think the hardest thing in seeing everything about it is just, you know, we're so close to this new record coming out and, you know, seemingly everyone involved in the band was very proud of this record. And, you know, based on the snippets that have come out, the one song, Fuck Love, that's out, and I think there's one other one I can't remember the title of off the top of my head, but, you know, it's these kind of things that just, you know, really suck. You know, you have this thing that, you know, you're looking forward to that's supposed to be a moment of triumph, like, you know, this thing that you collectively as a band all went to go to war and come out, you know, with a product that you're happy with, and now, you know, I would imagine Aaron and all the guys would probably share this sentiment or at least, you know, agree with it. But I think based on the way everyone's reactions to how proud they were of this work and what was laid down on these songs, I think it's probably safe to say that this is the record, you know, that, you know, they're happy, you know, to have got out, you know, with Ole still being a part of it. And I know I'm more interested, you know, with the reinvigoration of the band for this record and working with DL from X Acacia Strain and so forth. Really interested to see how he was able to push Ole and the rest of the dudes to create some just fucking banging ass songs. I mean, Fuck Love comes out and you're like, you wanted something from Fall of Ideals Part 2? Well, fuck you. How about we go back to This Darkened Heart and just play some brutal shit? And yeah.
Not what I was expecting at all.
No.
Because I remember thinking, like, Fuck Love, that's such a stupid name. And then I heard the song, and I was like, it's like the coolest song I've heard this week. Like, it was cool.
Yeah.
Some people called it Brocore or whatever, but, like, fuck those people, man. You know, it's like, you want a heavier All That Remains? Again, here you go. But you're going to shit on it anyway because you have a certain mindset or whatever. They were listening to the fans.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, and to have a tragedy like this totally fucking sour the whole experience, man. Just, I really can't describe it to you. It's just two guys talking. I don't know what to say. Like, it just, I can't wait to hear the new record, but it also sucks that this is the last record I'm going to hear him on. And he was probably one of my favorite aspects of the band.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
Yeah. It's been kind of rough. Like Dan said, this interview was conducted about a week or so before all this stuff kind of happened, and had been in basically the day that I did that Phil interview. Aaron had agreed to come on and talk about various things. One of the main reasons I really wanted to have him on initially was just, you know, the whole thing that of with him being the tour manager of the band. And as you kind of end up hearing in the chat, it's more for like smaller runs and stuff like that. When they do bigger, longer, you know, non-headlining runs, they usually will have somebody else doing it. But I mean, it's interesting in this day and age, you know, you're starting to see this a lot more. Like, you're starting to see the band people take responsibilities where maybe you would pay someone before, because unfortunately touring is the only place really where bands can afford to make any money, and any money going out is just not financially feasible to make a career out of this anymore. So you have to start making concessions as to how to be successful in touring. And like I said, when I saw that he was TMing Like the Torch Dudes, you know, Mike was TMing, Wombi was doing merch. Like, you know, it's kind of interesting to see bands at that level that you don't assume are doing that. And it just makes me go to the thing, like, where you see small local bands that are like, oh, we need this, we need this, we need this. It's like, no, motherfucker, you don't need shit, dude. Like, look at some of these bands that you're aspiring to be like. They're still out there doing shit on their own.
You need a van and crossed fingers. That's all you need.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah. All the somberness aside of most of this intro, you know, I just want to say, you know, I had a lot of fun talking with Aaron, and I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation. Again, prefacing, all the events happening with the band, you know, obviously didn't happen when we did this interview, so don't think that I'm just some, like, we're assholes for not, for him being jovial and kind of, you know, bullshitting and having fun during the conversation. That's the things that happened hadn't transpired yet. So All that being said, without further ado, this is my conversation with Aaron Patrick of All That Remains. So I have the pleasure of this early evening of talking to Aaron Patrick, bassist of All That Remains, who have a new album getting ready to come out November 9th via Razor and Tie called Victim of a New Disease. How are you doing this early evening?
I am doing awesome.
So you got done doing a tour. How did that tour end up? I know I got to catch the one date of it.
Tours are always good. You know, we have a good time, and it's always a pleasure to, I mean, you know, that's what we do. We go out and we play shows and interact, and we got awesome fans, and you know, nothing's better than being in different cities and watching people, you know, just have a great time and sing your songs back at you, and you know, living in a moment together. It's a wonderful thing. Never take it for granted.
You know, I've always thought it's kind of interesting what is someone's big event for one night is like your every day. So I've always kind of wondered how hard is it kind of,
yeah, that's
to,
a good way to put it. I thought that's funny, like when I first, like, you know, really started doing this, you know, full time, and being someone that, you know, for a long time really tried to make this work in different, you know, bands and situations and everything. Growing up, going to shows, you know, that was always the exciting thing. You know, you couldn't wait till that Friday or whatever the date was. And like, you know, you build up the anticipation in your mind, especially if you love a band or an artist. But it's funny, like right when, you know, I started being able to do this on a real level, I one of my cool, like, however you want to call it, like, I don't know, come to Jesus moments is like that, like, I get to be somebody's Friday night, and I used to tell myself that all the time. And it's always a really cool perspective.
Does it kind of make you realize, like, I should go, like, I shouldn't be all frumpy or down about it? Because it's like, you know, obviously, I never know how to ask this question, because like there's a million ways you can go with it, but it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, sometimes you hear people that are like, oh, you know, like touring sometimes is hard. I'm away from my loved ones. I'm not in my own bed, so on and so forth. All the things that kind of tend to drag on that I don't think the average person is maybe aware of, the tediousness of touring day in and day out. But I would imagine, like, you know, if you kind of put your mind into it like that, where you're like, okay, people came to see us play. And it's their big event, like it's their thing that they're excited to see. Like, I guess that would probably pump me up, where it's like, yeah, fuck yeah, like people came to see me.
Yeah, you know, like that's a tough question, because at the end of the day, like, touring is hard, and it can be hard, especially, you know, if things are going on back home, or like, you know, there's always a circumstance. You know, it's easy to go, well, you're out just hanging out and traveling around. Well, it's not like being on vacation. You know, there is work, and there is a lot of stuff, and there is a lot of nights where you don't get to sleep, and you got to get up and catch flights, and it sucks. It's, you know, it beats you up. It makes you, just like anything else, we know, when you don't get adequate, you know, rest and recovery, and just like anything else, you know, you can feel pretty beat up, especially when you're away for a long time. 3 months is usually my, we call it tour aids. When, like, you know, if you're just over it, and you're like, God, I just can't wait for this to be over so I can get home, or like something, you know, bad's going on, and like you just, someone's in a bad mood, like, uh-oh, so-and-so's got tour aids. no offense to anyone who, I don't know, whatever. You get the point. But yeah, you know, I can. But like at the end of the day, when you get to go and play, if you have an awesome show, it makes the entire day and everything worth it. 100%, never fail. So yeah, that's all that really matters, is the 1 hour out of that day, and everything else is kind of, you know, is just putting on a good show for the fans. And like, half the time, that's what it comes down to be. You know, like, you may have a shit day, or you know, feel like shit, or be sick, or whatever the case is, but at the end of the day, the last thing you want to do is go out there and let everybody know, wear your emotions on your sleeve, because that sucks. Because if I had bought a ticket 3 months in advance to see my favorite band, and a guitar player was up there just moping around looking like he would rather be anywhere else, I would be so bummed out.
That's happened to me when I got to see Finch for the first time on their Say Hello to Sunshine record cycle with a opening for him. And I guess Randy was having, their guitar player was having some kind of technical issues, would just constantly come out, something wasn't work, throw his guitar down on the ground, walk off stage. Yeah, band just wasn't having it. And then I think, if my memory serves me correctly, like 4 or 5 days later, like a week later, they broke up. Like,
oh wow.
So it was like one of those where I was like, man, I was so pumped to like see this band, and then it was just like, they were terrible, the crowd didn't give a fuck, and it was just like, Jesus Christ, this is rough.
Yeah, those aren't fun nights, and they happen to the best of us. You know, like, nothing's worse than, especially like when you're you're in a good mood, the show's awesome, and you just want to go out there and kill it, and you got a technical problem, or like something happens and you got to stop a song. You know, like, it's just, it ruins it. You don't get a second chance. You know? Especially like, we had a sound guy on last year. We were playing in I don't know, where was that? I don't know, but patched something in wrong. We went to go start the set, you know, and like the intro is rolling, and Jason couldn't hear the click track. So he's up there like, goes like, there's like a four count, and then the song starts. Well, I run out there, and it, like, he can't hear it. And like, I know where when the intro ends, like, we usually come in, and I'm like, weird, why don't I hear the him counting on the hi-hat to like start the song? And then like the intro stops, and it's just me standing out there Like, like, all right, it's my what's her face? Ashley Simpson on SNL.
Yeah.
You know, just out there and everyone's just looking at you like, I'm like, okay, I guess I'm going to go back behind the curtain. We're going to start this over again. You know, that sucks. Like, but what can you do? You go out there and just try to wear a smile. Hopefully nobody throws tomatoes at you.
Well, that was kind of the weird thing too. And it's funny, we're kind of on this tangent. You know, I was talking with Porter McKnight yesterday, or maybe it was this morning, I don't remember. But long and short of it, they played the show at St. Vitus, and I was asking him how it went and all that kind of stuff, and he was like, oh man, like it was like one of our first shows where we're using in-ears, and there's just like all kinds of problems, and they didn't have, like, it was kind of a clusterfuck, which kind of sucked. I mean, the show was fine, but, like, you know, it kind of put a dampen on the mood a little bit. And it was kind of one of those things, like, you know, because at a certain level, like you guys are all at, like, a lot of the touring thing is like a well-oiled machine. Like, you have techs, you have people running sound, who, like, you know, everyone kind of has their one job that, or many jobs, I should say, but, you know, has that one thing that is supposed to be a well-oiled machine. Everyone can fix these problems on the fly. And, you know, when you just said that, it kind of reminded me, I think at the show actually here, like, I don't know what happened, but I remember for, like, and I don't know if you guys could hear it, but, like, there was a solid 3-4 seconds maybe where all the guitars and everything just dropped out and all you could hear was, like, drums from the stage. It was like all the mics were accidentally muted. But, yeah, like, you guys didn't stop, and I was just like, wow, a lesser band that probably would have really thrown off, but, like, you guys just kept playing. And I think that also speaks to the professionalism of a band of your caliber at this point, and you guys, is that those things, even though you probably are aware of them, you understand, like, okay, things are probably being worked on to fix this really quickly, like, just keep going, don't let it derail you. And I think that's a really hard lesson to learn, even to apply it to life, like, that when shit's kind of not going your way, like, you still need to, like, man up and just, or, you know, person up, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just work your way through it.
Yeah, like, that's the whole part of being a professional band. Like, you can't just crumble under the pressure. I mean, obviously, you know, some things are out of your control, but, you know, like, that's why you, I mean, you know, hopefully as a professional band, you know, you've been through every problem, so you should be prepared for those things, so that even when they do happen, you have a backup plan B, or, like, you know, you have an easy fix. And yeah.
You know, something I kind of wanted to bring up, because I didn't find a ton of interviews with you. But yeah, you know, coming in at the end of the order of things, you know, something I always find interesting now, and especially with the Hired Gun documentary, and just, you know, a lot of, you know, seeing people.
That was great, by the way. Jason did such a good job. And I'll just touch on, I hate to interrupt you, but, like, same thing, you know, like, it really hit home for me, because, I mean, that's before this band, and, like, and, you know, one other, I mean, that's been, you know, all of my jobs, and it's always been, you know, nothing's ever been permanent.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And that was the thing that I really enjoyed about that documentary. And it sounds like maybe there's a part two, maybe being worked on. I don't know, according to some other podcasts I've heard him do, but it's one of those things where, you know, seeing a documentary like that, I think, shines a light on a lot of these ancillary players that, you know, come in, fill a void that's needed for a band to continue to go on. And so the thing that's always interesting to me about that is, you know, when you get someone to come in, like, obviously you were filling in for Janine, who had opted to, you know, no longer be in the band. And it made me wonder, and I haven't really seen it said anywhere, so if it has been said, or this has been, you know, a well-worn topic, like, that's fine. But, you know, when you came on, was the intention to come on as a full-on permanent member, or was it just like, hey, we need someone, when, you know, you came at it through a recommendation of somebody, and we'll see how it goes after this tour?
Yeah, it was actually the easiest transition ever. the story with me and the band goes, so back in, I was in a band called Bury Your Dead, which I was basically been in from 2000 and, was this, end of 2005, I think, sounds about right. Was when I joined that band. As that was kind of like, I was at home. I'd been in a couple hardcore bands and done some light touring. And we had done my old band, Suffocate Faster, from Cincinnati. We had done some shows together, became friends. Well, when they kicked their old bass player Rich out back in 2005, I got called to join the band. I was like, oh my gosh, really? And like at that time I was living in Kentucky. I was a welder and I'd pretty much given up. I was like, man, it's never going to happen. You know, all I wanted more than anything just to be in a band and eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and live in a van, you know, like eat it or would come through town or whoever come back here and be like, I just want to live in a van and just play music. That's and just not, you know, that's all I cared about. And I quit college twice. Each respective band got signed and I was like, you know, I gave it a real shot and it failed both times. And, I had, like I said, I'd pretty much given up. And then they asked me to join and I was just beyond myself. If that's, is that the right expression? Beside myself?
Beside yourself?
Beside myself. Thank you. And so like the guitar player at the time lived in Jacksonville and I used to go down there and visit and hang out, you know, whatever. So like I got rid of all my stuff and I moved to Florida, which is crazy. A dude from the Midwest, you know, living near palm trees and like I can drive to the beach. It was just surreal to me. I'm like, how is this real life? This is where you go to vacation. Nobody can't live here. So like I had joined the band and then, you know, started touring and like my second tour with the band, we opened up for Killswitch Engage and All That Remains was on that tour. And so it's Hatebreed did the second half and All That Remains did the first half.
Yeah.
And then, so we became friends, you know, we got along really well and then, and, you know, whatever, stayed in touch. And then in 2010, I joined Devil Driver and I played with them for 2 years. So we were on tour on and Soundwave. There was a festival in Australia called Soundwave and we were down there and we toured together and they played right after us. Well, you know, Phil and Mike used to go like, I just, you know, really like your stage presence and how you play and look on stage, yada, yada, yada. And you're obviously like a, you know, cool dude. So like, if she ever can't tour anymore, you know, see after them, I started working on a tour managing. I basically wanted to, as a hired gun in between jobs, I wanted to keep myself busy. And, you know, I didn't want to stop touring. I didn't want to go home and get a job. So it's like, what can I do? How can I be involved in this world? You know, two ways, you know, whether I'm playing or doing production, whatever. So I learned how to tour manage. One of my awesome friends, Jenny Douglas, basically taught me how to do it. You know, she's worked for a lot of really top level acts and I really enjoyed it. So fast forward, they needed a tour manager on that record cycle. And once we had that relationship and they knew, you know, saw my resume and were like, this is perfect. So I started TMing them and then, I think I only did maybe like two tours and then I was home and Jeannie texted Phil and basically was like, hey, you know, do you mind if we talk? And, he was like, sure, no problem. And then, you know, she decided that she wanted to step away and do something else or a different part of her life, however you want to phrase it. And then, he basically like 30 seconds after they got off the phone texted me. So do you want to join the band? I went, yeah, sure. Why not? Let's do it. And the story actually goes, I was so excited because once again, like kind of that same point where I was before, I'd kind of given up. I had only been TMing. I teamed from Hatebreed and Bring Me the Horizon and Unearth and a bunch of other bands. And, you know, and so when I actually got asked to be a full member of the band and like to do it for real, I was really, really excited. And I actually jumped up and down in the middle of the street. I was walking to the gym when I got the call and I ran out in the middle of the street and I jumped up and down, I don't know, a couple of times. And I was just, you know, I was pretty fucking stoked.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned the TMing stuff, because that's definitely something I wanted to get into with you. You know, nowadays, I feel like it just, we're in an economic state with touring where, you know, obviously it's the only way that bands are really making money. You know, you're able to sell merch, which, I mean, I work for a screen printing company, so I know like your margins and so forth on it are usually really good. But, you know, even touring is kind of sucks at times as far as trying to make a living, because as in a band setting, because I mean, it's like, you know, something maybe people know is that venues take a cut of your merch.
Yeah, it's the stupidest thing ever.
Sure is. And I just don't understand why people aren't just like, hey, meet us. We'll just set it up.
We brought the people. Give me a cut of your beer sales.
Yeah. I mean, some people do that for money. Yeah. But I mean, it's one of those things, like, you know, I've never, there's so many hands in the pocket there where it's like, okay, like the venue takes money for various things. And, you know, obviously a bus or a bandwagon or whatever costs, you know, techs cost money, so on and
so
forth.
Yeah, overhead on tour is so
stupid. But the thing that was kind of interesting to me was, I, you know, and this is, I mean, something that, you know, I'm learning all the time as well, but I would definitely would have figured a band of your size definitely would not have someone in the band taking on another role. And, you know, for you to be the TM of your band, I thought it was kind of interesting because I think it speaks to the economic climate we're in with touring, where, you know, you're seeing a lot more band. I think Killswitch is probably the best example of a band that's so self-reliant that they don't need other people, because you have a graphic designer, you have someone who produces your shit.
Converge is the best example. They Jake, I forgive me if I mess this up. I don't know. We're like, well, actually, I believe, because my friend Tom does merch for them.
Okay.
As far as I'm aware, he manages the band, he books the band, he does, he TMs, he literally does everything.
And Kurt records.
And obviously records, in it, which is insane, amazing, because the percentages he saves between management and booking are, you know, I can't imagine, you know, that's usually, what is that? Usually 50, it's usually 25% of your yearly gross.
Yeah.
On average. You know, it's a lot of money to save. So like that dude hustles. And I don't know Jake. Converge isn't my cup of tea. I saw him once and they were actually really good live, but just not the kind of music I jam on. But much respect to that dude. I think he's always done it that way, and that's you can't shake that with a stick.
No, not at all. I mean, that's the thing that's interesting to me, I think, about the whole thing is, you know, a lot of the bands that come and go, it's like you look at the bands that have been around, you look at a Converge, you look at an Every Time I Die, you look at, you know, Hatebreed.
Same thing with those dudes. Those dudes, they still take a van whenever they can, you know.
Oh, yeah.
They're older than me, you know, like, you know,
years. I was just saying, they're on the road all the fucking time.
Heck yeah, they are.
And so. But I mean, I think there's that tireless DIY ethic that is why a lot of these bands are still around. And to me, I think, you know, like I said, seeing a band like All That Remains, where you're still the TM, and I understand.
Well, I do it on like fly dates and like small little things, because it's, you know, like I'm capable, and that's one less body to bring out and pay and stuff like that. But if we do like a full US or full run or something like that, whatever, I will usually bring somebody out, because. You know, I don't mind doing small stuff. I don't really do like the long tours anymore, because I just, you know, I got to go to the gym for 3.5 hours a day and eat 17,000 meals. So, it's pretty taxing, so, you know, to try to fit all that in and take care of everybody and stuff like that. So I just kind of live my life sometimes now that I actually compete, and it's, my diet and training is very important to me. So yeah, I'll do like one-offs and that kind of stuff, and like a week run, no big deal. But
so, I mean, I don't know exactly when you TM for like Bring Me or something like that, but like, what does TMing for a band or any of the bands that you've worked with? But I'll kind of focus on Bring Me, because I can kind of speak more to their trajectory over the last handful of years. But what does being with a band like that and kind of being at the head of making sure it runs smoothly, what does something like that teach you that you then can apply to what you're doing in your own thing?
I don't know. What do you mean?
What was that?
What do you mean? I'm trying to see where you're going with that.
So, I mean, like, obviously as a TM, like, you got to make sure everything's running smooth. You got to deal with potential egos and all that kind of stuff. Like, you deal with things that I don't think a lot of people understand what a tour manager actually does day in and day out.
Absolutely.
So with Bring Me the Horizon, you know, they're a band that obviously has just exploded worldwide over the last 5, 6, 7 years, whatever. So seeing a band like that and seeing them potentially growing literally as you're on a tour, maybe, like I said, I don't know exactly when you were with them, but I mean, it's like, I think as it's safe to say, like, within the last two records, it's just been an astronomical climb up. So at that point, it's like, I can see maybe where when a tour was booked, you knew you were going to do it. Hey, we're playing these rooms. Oh, nope. Now we're going to start doing this. And just kind of the variables of being with a band that's just shooting through the roof as far as just like their popularity, you know, and seeing how it affects them, seeing how the business side of working in a band at that level, like if you're able to then learn anything from a band that's going through this momentum, I guess, or however you want to word that, how you're then able to go like, oh wow, okay, like I see how this is working, and in order to be at this level or do these things, like these kind of things need to happen. Okay, like now I can apply this to either, you know, working in All That Remains or working in a band or, you know, something. I don't know. Maybe there's not a parallel there at all.
Well, it's just like anything, like any working with, no matter who you work for or with, it's all experience, you know, and like it's it all adds up to your, you know, your resume and how you handle every situation, whether it be big or small. Remy was a really, it was an amazing, fun, but very challenging, my wife's calling me, she's gonna have to wait, I'm in the middle of the thing, you know, because like, once again, like you said, the band was growing so fast, they had so much on their plates. I literally, you know, and their management office was in the UK, so they were whatever 5-6 hours ahead of whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I was in Florida, so I would literally, they would be at work already for 5 hours, and there was so much happening. I would wake up to, no joke, every single morning, 50 to 80 emails. If it was clear the night before, there was so many threads and so much correspondence, and we would work on visas. And my last tour with them, for instance, I started with them. I actually went in the studio with them when they were recording Sempiternal. I had known the guys forever, and you know, Baradet took them on their first U.S. tour ever, and we shared a bus, so we'd known each other for a long time. So I went over there to hang out and just kind of, and I meet their whole management team and everything. So actually, it was really cool. I got to go to the studio and, you know, meet Terry Date and watch them a couple things for a couple days. It was really, really cool. And so when we started everything at the beginning of that cycle, it was crazy. You know, everything was small clubs. And then less than a year later, my last tour thing that I did was down in Australia. It took me 3 months to prep this because we slow boated all of their production. And we had these 10-foot letter BMTH letters built and all this other shit and put it in a container. And it took 2 weeks to send it down to Australia. And then, you know, we had snow machines and cryo and all this stuff and 5,000 seats in Sydney, you know, like, so we're 8 months earlier, they were playing, you know, small clubs.
Right.
So there was just a lot to do and a lot of things. And, you know, I had to organize everything and take care of the band and make sure the crew was doing their job and they were all great. And so it's a lot of things. It's a no sleep job.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, they're one of the few bands, like I said, where it's just like, I didn't like anything they were doing prior to Sempiternal. And then when they came out, I was like, oh my God, you figured out how to write good songs.
Yeah, they've got that down, that's for sure. They especially Jordan coming into the band, you know, he brought such a cool dynamic and helped bring out the best of them, I think. And especially, you know, he basically produced and engineered the That's the Spirit, which he did that all himself, you know. Incredible. So there you go.
You know, I would be a little remiss since I've never actually talked to anyone who has been or seen Terry Date work. What was that like? Because that's a motherfucker that, like, if you're in the heavy game, like, music-wise, like, if you're into heavy music at all, like, that dude's got his fingerprints all over this fucking scene. So, like, what was it like watching him be able to work? Even if it was just, like, I guess pre-production or whatever.
Yeah, I think I was just more like, yeah, I mean, it was just a, I don't know, I guess I don't really have any cool story to back that question up, other than, I don't know, just hanging out, and I get to hear some cool stories, and he'd show us some old pictures of Dime, and, like, from back, you know, during the Vulgar recordings and stuff, and, like, that. So that was pretty cool. But, I mean, I don't know, studio stuff is boring. You know, like, you don't really see things come to life. It's all, like, tiny glimpses, and then I think the magic happens, you know, later. It's hard to, like, see something in the moment and be like, whoa, I can't believe I just saw that happen. It's just kind of, it's not really like that. You know,
no,
like,
for sure. Yeah, it's a lot of, that was great. Do it again. And yeah, again. Yeah. Oh, I think that was, you really did a great job on that. Do it again.
Yep. Yep. Hang on. Wait. Copy. Fly that over. Cool. All right. What's next? We're going to go to this other song and touch this other part up. You know, it's just, it's so like all over the place. You don't really like, it's hard to take it in other than the fact that you're just there.
Kind of speaking to, you know, you said you work out a bunch of stuff like that. I tend to find, you know, a lot of bands are, and maybe it's because, you know, we have apps and Google phones and all that kind of shit where everyone can do this more accessibly. But, you know, something that was kind of, I thought was amusing was, you know, when trying to figure out and get the Phil interview lined up when you guys were here in town, you were like, hey, we're going to go to the gym. Can we like push this back a little bit? You know, it's funny that that happens so often that, you know, how hard is it to find a gym? Like, do you, when you're looking at the routing, are you, because I think I texted you, I was like, oh, did, which Planet Fitness did you go to? And you laughed at me and you're like, fuck, we don't go to fucking Planet Fitness. But it's one of those things that I was wondering, like, when you get a schedule, like, do you like route and figure out like, okay, we're close to this, or hey, I'm gonna call up and, you know, talk to people from the road and be like, hey, like, where do you go when you're in this town or whatever? Or, you know, how actively ahead of this do you get like with your touring to be able to maintain your routine?
It really depends. The two scenarios are usually like, obviously if I've been to a city before and I'm familiar with a place, or I have a friend there that, like, you know, I am training friends with, you know, like, we'll set it up like, hey, like, oh, hey, I'm going to be here on this day. Like, you want to come scoop me up and go here, whatever. And then I compete in powerlifting. So I typically do my best to find proper, like, you know, it's a different kind of gym. A dedicated strength gym is going to have typically more specialized stuff than a Gold's or an LA Fitness or anything like that. Plus the environment is different. Me personally, it's the style of training that I like to do. So I like a more raw environment and, you know, where it's chalk everywhere and making noise. And I mean, you know, there's a class to it, if you want to call it that. But, you know, it's more of a lifter's gym versus just going to a comfort zone where they're full of carpet and easy listening music, you know, and a bunch of machines, which is fine. Whatever gets you in there. And if you're training to your fullest potential, that's a wonderful thing. I will never, you know, have a high nose to anybody who even if they're do calisthenics on a yoga mat, that's great. You know, if you're, other than if you're not just, you know, sitting around and staring at your iPhone, that's a great thing. So yeah, that's kind of how it works typically. And then if I don't know anybody, or if I can't find a, you know, like a good powerlifting gym or a strength gym, and CrossFit gyms are actually pretty good at having, 70% of the stuff that we have, because, you know, they'll have like proper barbells and squat racks, and, you know, once again, it's a more open style gym. They'll play loud music, and it's not just, you know, it's not a comfort zone, which I don't like to be comfortable when I work out. I don't want it to be air conditioned, and I want to sweat and get dirty and like put the work in, you know. If you follow The Rock, you will. That's, you know, that's like what he does.
Well, you don't follow Mark Wahlberg, who gets up at like fucking what, 3 a.m. every day.
You know, he looks great, but I don't know. He also wears gloves when he works out, and so. But, you know, I don't know. Whatever. Mark Wahlberg's awesome. I can't hate on him. what was I gonna say?
The Rock.
Yeah, that's my kind of vibe, and that's what I like. But if I can't find that stuff, you know, we'll just all find a YMCA is actually pretty good about, you know, they'll typically have older stuff, which I like. Once again, you know, like it's a little more rough around the edges. Find a YMCA or whatever the options are. Depends on what city you're in or what's available. And we usually just Uber, and you can either try to sweet talk our way in and go, hey, we're in town, you know, we'll give you tickets, or maybe, I don't know, whatever, or pay a day pass. You know, whatever if it's a local gym, I actually like paying day passes because you're supporting local businesses, and right. And I respect the hustle. It's not like LA Fitness; they can afford to lose the $10.
And then, kind of in wrapping up, you know, you guys got a new single dropping tomorrow. Everything's Wrong. You already released "Fuck Love," much to the surprise of the internet, I think.
Yeah, right. Just dropped that out there.
How excited are you to you know, get this record out? I know it was, you know, I think it was supposed to kind of be a surprise, you know, with how aggressive Fuck Love was and just kind of the record as a whole dropping so soon.
Yeah, super excited. Like, I don't know. It's Madness was fun. You know, like, I really, really enjoyed, you know, making that record, because it is really eclectic and it is kind of weird, you know? Like, it is kind of, I don't know, it's more like, you know, a one-off record. There's so many different tones and feels, and it's like Iron Maiden somewhere in time, you know? Like, it's, people look back on it and be like, oh my god, I love that, but when it came out, people hated it. Like, it's new, it's different, it's got weird synthesizer stuff in it, and like, it got a lot of flack. And, you know, a lot of bands have done that. They've tried to just be like, hey, let's get out of our comfort zone and let's just do something creative and different and not write the same songs over and over again. You know, it's like you eat the same peanut butter and jelly sandwich every single day. I mean, I know, like, when it comes to fans, I mean, you're at the mercy of somebody's opinion, you know, like what they like. All you can do as a band is you can just try. I don't know. It's, this band has always, you know, I can speak for them on this, at least, always wrote songs the way they wanted to. You know, it was in the beginning when, you know, everyone loves Fall of Ideals, but like, that's, they busted that out in no time at all. And that's just, they wrote that because they wanted to do it. And that's what they did. And it turned out great. And same thing with everything else. It's never been about, well, this is what we do and then we have to stick to this. It's always been about, we write songs because the way that we want to write them. And which I think is great. You know, like, same thing with Metallica Load and even the Black Album. People hated it when it came out. I mean, obviously, like, it did well in the beginning, of course, but like, there was a lot of fans that were pissed off. Like, this sucks. It's not thrash and this and that, but like, it's like one of the highest selling albums of all time. It's incredible. So I'm not comparing Madness to that, but I'm just saying in perspective, like, you got to do it. You feel right, you know? And like, it's, at the end of the day, it's your company and it's your art and it's your product. And like, you have to love it too, or else it doesn't become fun anymore. You know, that being said, I love the way this turned out. There is a lot of really, really heavy stuff on it. And there's some really great melodies and singing, and Phil once again pushed himself. And I think he came up with some really cool stuff. I hope people like it. You know, it's definitely a different feel than the last two records. So, yeah.
I think it's funny because I think what a lot of people forget now, you know, everyone that's like, oh, The Fall of Ideals, that was the best record. When The Fall of Ideals came out, I remember everyone bitching because it wasn't This Darkened Heart.
Yeah, there you go.
So you know, I think it's funny.
So
that
much
all
singing
the,
on it. Why yeah, is he singing all, so much? It's,
oh my god, Adam D ruined the band. He made him kill Switch Light or whatever. And it's like, but now it's like, it's funny that, what is it, 10 years later or whatever, or a little over 10 years later, it's like, everyone's like, that's the best record. And it's like, when it came out, all of you hated it.
Well, what's funny about that record too is, you know, I can only repeat myself so many times, but people love to, you know, praise that record up and down. And it's great. Don't get me wrong. You know, like, I was a fan of the record before I worked for the band. And, you know, like, you know, I'm a fan of the catalog before, that's why I joined, because I like the music. But people talk about it like it's the only thing the band heavy, like, we put out this one heavy record, like it's Life of Agony. They dropped first record, I can't believe I'm drawing a blank, it's one of my favorite records of all time.
Something Red? Or
River Red. Runs Red.
Yeah.
That record's so fucking heavy, and his, you know, Keith's voice, Mina's voice sounds so different, on that record. And like, as they progressed, they got softer and softer. There were some great songs, but it wasn't that first record. Now everyone talks about this like it's the most brutal, heavy, this masterpiece, which is a great record, but like, for We Are Many, if you ask me, smokes that record. The production's better, the songwriting's better, it's easily just as heavy, if not heavier. But somehow people forget that. They like, oh, like, that doesn't exist. And same thing with Overcome. That record, like, was incredibly, you know, ballsy. I mean, I don't know. So it's funny. You're like, did you not hear the other two that came after it? So, or any of the other heavy, like, other heavy songs on any of the other records? Like, did you actually listen to them other than the singles? Because the singles are what go to radio. And, like, the, you know, like, Asking Too Much or whatever the case is, What If I Was Nothing? But the rest of the records have always been heavy, always on every single record. So Madness is the exception because it's obviously it's a little more eclectic and has some different textures and stuff in it. It's not just a metal record. So it's always funny to hear that stuff. It's like, did you listen to the other 35 songs that came after that?
No.
Because there's stuff that's exactly. So it's always funny to hear that stuff.
Well, it's like, you know, and I hate to, the only reason I'm harping on this one chat is because there's a lot of similarities between the one I did with Porter from Atreyu and this one now with this, what we're talking about. But it's like, you know, he said, it's like, if you want to listen to The Curse, go fucking listen to The Curse. It exists.
You know, shit.
Like, if you want to listen to The Fall of Ideals, go listen to it. No one's stopping you.
And I think Atreyu has only gotten better. I think their songwriting has only gotten better and better as the years go on. Because I personally don't care for that record that much. I remember when it came out, I'm like, eh, it's not really my thing. But when, what is it? What's the one after that? Death Wish?
A Death Grip on Yesterday, yeah.
Death Grip on Yesterday? Great record. And then Lead Sails?
Yep.
That's a perfect record to me. John Feldman fucking killed that record.
Well, you're going to love this new record then.
Yeah, I'm really, really stoked to hear it. So that's my take, and you know, it's, I don't know, it's, I, and that's great because you're a band, you should be writing better songs as you keep going on. You should be progressing and writing better stuff as musicians, and you know, your chemistry should be growing, and like, there's nothing wrong with that. It makes me nuts. Like, I don't know, it's like, if you don't like the fucking sandwich you're being served, go fucking eat somewhere else, dude.
I have definitely told some people that before at some of my past jobs.
just because you sell pizza and you want to add, you know, some other items of the menu doesn't mean that you suck. If you just, you can still get your pizza.
Right.
Whatever. I think that's the best analogy I got.
So kind of, in, you know, wrapping up, I always like to have the person plug their social. So where can people find you, follow you, and the band?
The band obviously is All That Remains. Official, I believe, is the Instagram. My Instagram is Bubbles Forever. And yeah.
And I always like to
the things that we're most active on. I mean, we do a lot of posting on Facebook, but the band isn't as active on that as we are our personal ones and on the band Instagram, just because like there's just so much going on Facebook. Like it's hard to, I mean, you know, we have almost 2 million followers on there, so like there's so many just, you know, there's a lot of activity, which is great, and try to do our best to be on there, but it's, you know, it's challenging to do your own a band one, and then like the band Facebook, and like, you know, it all adds up, and there's only so many hours in the day. So.
Come to Indonesia.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I love Indonesia. Oh my god, Bali's the coolest place in the world. Bring Me played at the we did a show there at the Hard Rock, and it was one of the coolest shows I've ever done. It was so pretty. The people were super, super nice, and you know, I had a phenomenal experience there. I loved it.
And then lastly, I always like to end these out to a song. So, what would you like me to play it out to?
Any of our songs?
Doesn't even have to be yours. Could be anything.
Or my picking Hall & Oates or something.
Oh man, it wasn't Hall & Oates, but Hall & Oates are touring with this band, Tears for Fears. A friend just posted a video of some dude playing I don't even know what the fuck this instrument is. It was like sort of like a harp, but he's playing.
I forwarded that, or I reposted that on Facebook.
Okay, so you know the video I'm talking about where like this dude's playing this weird thing?
That, yeah, blew my mind. I think it's a dulcimer. That's a guitar.
Yeah.
Whatever. I saw it. It was awesome.
Yeah, that was it was crazy. Just how like laid back it was. So it's funny you saw it on Facebook today too.
If I had to pick a song, let's see here. Let me look at my last thing that I got in my iTunes here. Let's go with. Whenever I'm like, I just kind of need a mood booster, and like, I'm just like, you know, today just fucking sucks. I want to be better. I go to Billy Ocean, Caribbean Queen, and it just makes me the happiest.
You know, this is a really weird tangent of mine. It always bothers me that it's called, or however you want to say it, Caribbean, whatever. But yeah. Like, this, the way he, that's the one thing that I have a fascination with music is I've always been like, you know, I just want to be a singer of a band, even if like very terribly, because I want to make people say words the way I want them to. Like, it's like, okay, it's Caribbean, but like you turned it into this weird like three syllable word, four syllable, like you completely put the enunciation on it all weird. It's like, you know, Caribbean Queen or whatever. You're just like, that's not how you say it.
Yeah, he's great. He's just, I don't know, he's just got he's magical. I've watched a lot of his live stuff too. Like he's still got that voice.
It's kind of like the dude from Aha.
Yeah, I heard an acoustic version, and it sounded phenomenal.
Oh, from Deadpool 2?
Was that what it was?
It was in Deadpool 2, I think.
Okay, we'll go with that. You could be correct. the acoustic version?
Of Take On Me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe that's where I heard it. Either way, it was really good.
Yeah, can't go wrong with like any of that stuff. I mean, it's been really weird. I've been trying to think of like what this I don't know if I mean to say mine. I don't even know what I guess the other day I found out apparently I'm still a millennial even though I'm like 34.
I know. Somebody told me that. I'm like, I'm not lumping myself into that category.
Yeah. I was like, is it kind of like can
I'm
we treat
way
it
too street smart for that.
I was like, can we treat it like an astrological sign where I'm like, oh, the cutoff was a couple of days ago. So yeah, I don't fit into that. But it was one of those things, like, I was trying to figure out, like, what the fuck is going to be the new classic rock? Or is it always going to be the same classic rock?
Who knows? I don't – it's hard to tell, but I don't know. I you know, I grew up listening to all that 80s pop stuff. Reminds me, like, because my parents listened to a lot of different stuff, but she reminds me of my mom. She used to have a Toyota – was it a Celica?
Yeah.
And she – I don't know. She just had all these cassettes, and just reminds me of simpler times, and I like it. This makes you feel good, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, thanks for taking the time and doing this. And again, your guys' new record, Victim of a New Disease, is out November 9th via Razor and Tie. And Everything's Wrong drops tomorrow as of when we're talking, which will be on the 12th. So go pre-order the new record. Do you know the link to pre-order? Like, are you guys – I assume you guys are doing all that.
Yes, but I'm not the one with that information.
All right. Well, it'll be in the show notes then. So if you're interested in purchasing and pre-ordering the new record, do that.
I know that it's already available for pre-order on Apple Music. So,
yes.
There you go.
And there's been rumors of tours, but whenever the band is out touring, go support them. Go see them. It's a good time. And again, thanks for taking the time to do this. So that was my conversation with Aaron Patrick of All That Remains. Dan, you couldn't be there for that conversation, but what did you think of that conversation? That was redundant.
That was a good combo, man. Like, I love hearing bands talk about band shit. I know that sounds really basic, but I'm a basic bro, man. I just like to hear – I liked him talking about when he was in Bury Your Dead, you know. I was a huge fan of that band for a number of years. Unfortunately, I have grown a little bit too much, so now I can't wear my Bury Your Dead hoodie anymore. But, goddamn, one of my favorite bands. And hearing how he got hooked up with the All That Remains guys was pretty great. So it definitely all worked out.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised to hear that. I mean, that's kind of the interesting thing when you talk to people who have, you know, joined other bands as they are already in their career. I mean, All That Remains is an interesting band as a whole. I mean, you look at Phil, who originally was tapped to do, like, what, Shadows Fall initially?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was kind of interesting to hear that, you know, they were like, I mean, this sounds kind of shitty, but it's like one of those things where it's like, you know, well, you know, Janine never gets pregnant, like, you know, the inevitable thing that potentially can happen to a woman as she, you know, finds love and wants to settle down potentially and so forth, you know, kids. And, you know, as a guy, you could be like, yeah, well, when you have a kid, like, yeah, you'll have like a week or two off and then you're going to go hit the road.
Right.
It's not as much of a hassle or a pain as it is for a woman to deal with, you know, as it is for a guy who can just leave because you're not pregnant. Right. And so, I mean, you know, the fact that there was kind of the seedlings dropped and sprinkled around, you know, like, hey, it'd be cool if you did this. And, you know, what's interesting, too, is like when Aaron ended up joining the band, I don't remember there being that much of an issue. Like people being like Bury Your Dead fans being like, oh, well, fuck this dude. Because, I mean, you look at when what was it? Chris Penny ended up leaving Dillinger to go join Coheed.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Everyone was like, all like staunch metal fans or just like our hardcore fans are like, you fucking left like the best band to go join a pussy band. Like,
I remember. Yep.
Yeah.
That's weird that you would read my exact comment off of, you know, whatever.
Oh, I had to go to Lamb Goat. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Jesus, Lamb Goat, man, my old stomping grounds.
I was anonymous 247.
No, dude, everything I post on Land Goat was like, is this band still Christian?
but no, it was a lot of fun. And, you know, talking, you know, something I didn't really know was that, you know, him with Aaron working with Bring Me, I mean, at the epicenter of basically Bring Me becoming the biggest band in the world. Like, that was,
shit.
I mean, I'm sure dude's got stories from the tours and just literally seeing the band just reaching that next level or 10 next levels, basically. And seeing Terry Date at work. I mean, goddamn. I would just love to find someone. Like, I would just, if I could find anyone who's actually worked with Terry Date, like recording with him, I would love just to pick their brain and be like, what is it like working with Terry Date?
We need to have Terry Date on the show, man.
I don't know if I'm on that level.
We'll just trick him. We'll just be like, I got this band. And we want to become the biggest band in the world.
Okay.
You know, and he'll probably be like, nah, I'm going to go work with somebody that's actually good. But, you know, we could get him on. We're on the level. Damn it.
Yeah, but, you know, kind of in wrapping up, want to thank Aaron again for taking the time. I definitely was only expecting like 20 minutes or so, and damn near, I mean, I cut out some stuff, but like we ended up chatting for about an hour or so. So greatly
cut
appreciate
out the best stuff.
I cut out.
I enjoy getting to hear the unedited raw files. I can tell you that.
Yes. But all that being said, want to thank Aaron again for taking the time to do the chat. If you would like to pre-order their new record, A Victim of a New Disease, it comes out November 9th via Razor and Tide Records. Pre-orders are still up for that. Go pick it up. CD, I think there's vinyl. I don't know if there's going to be touring. Obviously, with some of the stuff we talked about in the intro, kind of puts probably a damper on that, understandably. But keep up with them. If you would like to keep up with Aaron, though, you can find him on Facebook at Bubbleitis. If you would like to follow him on Instagram, it is Bubble Is Forever. And Twitter is Bubble _CXCB. And all that remains, just you can find them basically everywhere. Search out their name. Shouldn't be that hard to find. Again, their new record, Victim of a New Disease, comes out November 9th via Razor and Tie Records. And if you would like to keep up with our show sponsor, Mosh Pit Nation, you can find them at moshpitnation.com. Facebook is Mosh Pit Nation West, capital MI. Twitter and Instagram are simply Mosh Pit Nation. And if you would like to keep up with our show sponsor, The Bean Bastard, you can at thebeanbastard.com. Twitter and Instagram are simply The Bean Bastard. And Dan, where can people follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter at DiscussMetalDan or on Facebook under Daniel Terry. And you can find my other podcast under DiscussMetal.com.
And if you would like to keep up with all things going on here on the podcast, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at Johnson Title Podcast. Tweet at us at Johnson Title Pod and email us at JohnsonTitlePod@gmail.com. We're going to end this episode, as we always do, with a song. And as you heard Aaron pick, he wanted me to play it out to Billy Ocean's Caribbean Queen, however you want to fucking pronounce it. You heard my sentiments on singers just saying words and making them 19 syllables when it should only be two. But without further ado, here's an old classic, Billy Ocean, and we will talk to you guys next time. Burns you like never before.